This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Millions of federal workers go to work today under new rules. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. Federal agencies today are activating new Trump administration rules covering U.S. government's 2 million workers. The White House says it's a bid to cut waste and fraud, but the change targets labor unions. We have Marketplace's Erica Barris here via WESA in Pittsburgh. Erica, what are these rules?
So the rules limit the amount of official time federal employees can spend on union duties to no more than 25% of their time. They require the federal government to charge union members rent for space in federal buildings and to stop paying employees for the cost of lobbying the federal government. And then there are these new performance review standards. Before, if you weren't doing a great job, you had up to 120 days to turn things around. Now it'll be 30.
And how do the unions involved feel about this?
They've been very vocal about this, saying this action is one of many the president has taken to weaken bargaining power and more easily fire government workers. This comes after other actions, other moves against federal workers, such as budget cuts, a hiring freeze, revoking telework, a proposed pay freeze, and $143 billion in proposed cuts to retirement benefits.
And can we call this permanent, Erica?
It's as permanent as anything is. This isn't legislation, so the next president could roll this back. And there are some pending lawsuits, including one from the American Federation of Government Employees, which represents 700,000 members. They filed suit claiming the president's order violates the rights of its members.
Erica, thank you. Let me check the live financial screens here. The FTSE in London is up 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in a similar range. Interest rates, the 10-year Treasury yield down at 2.85%. President Trump is set to meet with fellow members of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization this week. He's been sharply critical of European countries and Canada for not spending enough on military budgets that underpin NATO. Countries had already been increasing their military spending after Russia annexed Crimea. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more.
American presidents have complained about how much the 28 NATO members spend on defense for decades, and they have an argument. Right now, only five countries spend the established goal, 2% of GDP. The United States spends about 3.5%. Nina Jankowicz at the Woodrow Wilson Center says the president can complain all he wants, but that 2% number is a goal, not a requirement.
The United States is not the mafia don of collective defense. This isn't a racket. So this continued bullying, all it's really doing is straining relationships with our allies at a time where we really need to be working together.
European nations tend to spend more on healthcare and unemployment and less on defense. But Charles Kupchan, a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, says it's a mistake for Trump to focus solely on the numbers.
A lot of the pressure should be put on how countries spend that money.
He says it should be about NATO's strategy, not dues. And it's good timing for these talks. After the NATO summit, Trump heads to Helsinki for a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
The other day, I spoke with the former U.S. ambassador to NATO about the funding issue. Marketplace.org has it now.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure?
At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Some years ago, I did a story here about a wild idea backed by a famous venture capitalist to build little islands just off the California coast where hotshot entrepreneurs could come to build businesses as part of the Silicon Valley ecosystem without needing a U.S. visa. These visas were tough to get even then. Now, in the intervening time, the federal government has been trying a little program to let certain foreign entrepreneurs temporarily come to the United States to start businesses. But recently, and largely unnoticed in the heated debate over immigration, is that the Department of Homeland Security has announced it's ending these special visas for entrepreneurs. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell has thoughts on this, and he joins us now from St. Paul. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, David.
Give me a sense of this rule that the Trump administration now intends to cancel. What was the idea here?
So the idea here is called the International Entrepreneur Rule. And the idea was to encourage immigrants to come here and start a business. So they had some minimal capital requirements and a couple of benchmarks. Now, can't defend this rule too much, David. It was a temporary visa that you could come here and start a business, a maximum of 5 years. So my reaction is rather than kill the program, why not expand it? Why not make it better? For example, instead of a temporary visa for 5 years, make it permanent.
But DHS is pulling the other way. They said this program was out of sync with the department's current policy priorities. They were worried about protections for U.S. workers and investors. But this was never a large-scale program, was it?
It wasn't a large-scale program, but it kind of how should I put this? It recognized the new global economy. About 15 countries now have some sort of version of this rule, some sort of version of a startup visa. I mean, countries like France, Singapore. I mean, they're really trying to attract foreign talent. And probably the biggest beneficiary of cutting out this rule here in the U.S. is our neighbor to the north, Canada. Canada has the welcome mat open for immigrant entrepreneurs, and they're actively recruiting immigrant talent. They have good universities. They have vibrant cities. And so you're seeing this ecology of immigrant entrepreneurship growing in Canada.
So the question for the U.S. is, are we now at a competitive disadvantage for people with bright ideas?
I think we are. I mean, look, one of the big advantages of the U.S. was we had the welcome mat open to entrepreneurs from around the world. Come here, start a business, go to our universities. And this is the kind of move that there's no immediate effect, David. This is sort of long-term erosion of competitiveness in the global economy. If you want to think about future growth, you're talking about startups, building businesses, creating jobs. And if immigrants want to do that, why wouldn't we welcome them?
Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell in St. Paul, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And Nissan has a VW-style problem for cars sold in Japan. The company admitted today it altered emissions and fuel economy test results at plants throughout Japan. It was using unauthorized contractors, apparently. Nissan says it regrets this was allowed to happen. The company says despite the corrupted data, all the cars actually met Japanese standards. Unlike the VW diesel scandal, there's no suggestion here that Nissan engineered the cheating into the cars. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.